For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome back to Believe in Islanders as the season gets started. I am very excited to introduce our special guest today, editor-in-chief of NYI Hockey Now, Christian Arnold. Christian, thank you for joining us today.
Of course, I'm happy to do it.
So, Christian, it's been a busy time. How has your season been going so far?
Yeah, it's certainly been busy. There's a lot to follow, even though the Islanders weren't necessarily as active as maybe people would have liked them to be. But certainly a lot of internal signings, a lot of news to keep up with, and a lot of trying to understand the rationale and thinking sometimes of general manager Lou Lamoriello.
And how has that been? The Islanders have a very unique situation where the media is very well respected by Lou Lamoriello, but they're not exactly given any free handouts. So you have to really work hard to get information. What's it like covering a Lou Lamoriello run Islanders?
Yeah, the team does not leak that much. So any bit of information that does come out certainly is a rare thing until the signings are official. And usually once that news starts to leak, it's more or less, I would say, probably by design, or at that point, it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, you just look at Zach Parise's deal coming out when he officially confirmed it before the team, and some of the other players that basically were free agents, but really didn't hear any chatter about them on the free agent market. So it is kind of a guessing game, if you will, sometimes, and it certainly is a challenge, to say the least. But it's a lot of trying to put the pieces together for, you know, to get 1 + 2 = 3.
So how do you balance speculation that is based on things that you are almost certain are true with waiting until it's confirmed by the team?
Yeah, I think there's certainly room for that. I think for what we do on the media side of things and in journalism, you know, you rely on sources, you rely on kind of your intuition. And obviously when you're kind of writing that way, it's dictated a certain way, I guess you could say. And, you know, you try not to overstep where you're not 100% sure, but certainly this off season was interesting, but you usually at that point could tell where the writing on the wall was.
And you have been taking us through that off season when you have been hosting Hockey Night in New York. You've been doing special dark episodes and planning in-person viewing parties too. How has that been going?
Yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun. I think that's a lot of the fun side of it. You know, I have a really great co-host in Sean Cuthbert, and you know, he comes at it from a fan perspective, and I come at it from more of the journalism perspective. You know, I've covered this team now for 10 years. Sean's a bit older than me, so he's been an Islander fan his a good chunk of his life, and he's seen a lot of bad, and he seems so good. So he certainly wears his heart on his sleeve. I think we have a lot of fun with it. The Hockey Night After Dark episodes have been more or less a product of scheduling, a product of because we have so many other things going on in our lives. Sometimes it's tough to do a live show at the time that we've dictated for it to do. And funny enough, it was honestly just one of our listeners, because we do the podcast through Twitch and we live stream it, so people are watching live. And it was one of our viewers and listeners that had actually put that moniker in the chat as the show was going on. And we kind of just, we had fun with it. And whenever we do sort of later episodes by necessity. So, it's been a lot of fun, and we're actually getting ready to host our first live event, of this season. We did a ton during the playoffs and in the regular season last year, once things started to open up and COVID restrictions started to loosen a little bit. But we're doing our first live event this year on Saturday, October 30th, before the Islanders Nashville game, sort of a Halloween themed boozy brunch, at RJ Daniels, which is a sponsor of ours, a presenting sponsor of ours on Hockey Night in New York. And, anyone that's listening is certainly encouraged to come down, wear a costume. It'll be a lot of fun, giveaways, We'll have some games and stuff going on during the intermissions. There have always been a great time during the playoffs, and I can only imagine they're going to be even more fun this year, especially with our new partnership with RJ Daniels.
Your podcast covering the ups and downs of the Islanders has been a metaphor for this season. In just three games, there have been ups and there have been downs. What have been your impressions on the Islanders through just three games?
Yeah, it's certainly it's a work in progress, I guess you could say. I think the natural reaction from a lot of people, especially the first two games, was a lot of doom and gloom. And there's understandably so, because I think that when you saw a lot of people talking about how the Islanders have often had slow starts before and they've made the playoffs relatively, for the most part in those seasons, compared to last year and in years in the past before that, the difference in those first two games is there was a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes by the Islanders, right? So you saw a lot of sloppy play. The communication wasn't there. Their defense, which is their bread and butter, seemed a little bit off. It wasn't, to me anyway, it didn't seem like that in years past. Now, that game against Chicago certainly had some elements of that in game three of the season. But you saw Ilya Sorokin finally step up and be the goaltender that the Islanders needed him to be in those moments. One of the other big things besides their defense has always been their goaltending, right? And so you look at the play of Ilya Sorokin through the first two games, and he struggled a bit. There's no question about it. Sure, he was hung out to dry in certain instances against Florida and against Carolina in those two games. But there were also moments where he needed to have some saves and just didn't come up with them. That wasn't the case against Chicago. That was a much better, much more locked in, much more confident Ilya Sorokin in that game. And he made the big saves, gave the Islanders a chance to win through the first two periods. They did not play great. There was 31 shots on goal on Ilya Sorokin through the first 40 minutes of that game. And he stopped every one of those shots, including a couple good chances, including a shorthanded breakaway in that last couple minutes of the second period before going to the third. And that's when you saw the Islanders really find their rhythm in that third period and get back to their style of hockey. It also didn't help that Matt Martin was hurt for the first couple games. The fourth line didn't look as intimidating, I guess you could say, as it had in the past when all three of them are out there. So they struggled a bit too. But then you kind of saw the opposite of that in the Chicago game. The Islanders weathered the storm early, which we've seen them do in the past, and then they were able to really get their game going, get their offense going, and find their rhythm in that third period.
With Semyon Varlamov injured, why was that performance against Chicago so important for Sorokin mentally after that rough first two games?
Yeah, I think it just gives him some more of that confidence. I don't think Ilya Sorokin lacks a lot of confidence. I think he's kind of in the same vein that Varlamov is and other goaltenders have been for the Islanders. You know, there's a very even keeledness to him. At the same time, he's still a young goaltender. He's still acclimating to a lot of new things in the National Hockey League. And this is his first 82-game season in this league. He's seeing teams that he's never seen before as well. You know, the Islanders are seeing teams that they haven't seen in a couple of years as well. So the importance of that game was the fact that to get back in that mental space of the confidence that he had, to know that he can play against these teams out west and the east, you know, good teams that the Islanders need to beat, kind of getting back into that headspace. And that was important for him to be there and kind of feel that confidence once again. So that was a big win for him. That was a big confidence boost for him. And I think too, for the Islanders and the guys in front of him, that's a huge momentum swing. When the guy, your last line of defense, your goaltender is making those critical saves. And I think most of them would tell you that. And it's been such a big part of the Islanders' runs in the playoffs and during the regular season as well in the past, is that they rely a lot when their game is slipping a little bit and they're making mistakes. They rely a lot on their goaltenders to make those big time saves. They had it in Robin Lehner. They have it in Semyon Varlamov when he's healthy, and they need to have it in Ilya Sorokin. In that game, in the third game of the year against Chicago, that's what they had.
Also, in the first two games, Zdeno Chara struggled. He has had an up and down season so far, but Islanders fans have seemed to scapegoat him as someone that really needs to improve his play. So what went wrong with Zdeno Chara in those first two losses?
You know, I think a lot of it, I think Zdeno Chara is getting fair criticism to a certain point. You know, he's looked his age in those games, but at the same time, not all of that's necessarily on Zdeno Chara. You know, when he's playing with a younger player like Noah Dobson, there's going to be mistakes that he's going to have to kind of make up for. So if he kind of gets caught trying to make up for a mistake with Dobson out of position or something like that, he's going to be the one that is highlighted because he's the veteran, because he's, you know, Zdeno Chara, future Hall of Famer, all these other things. That being said, he certainly looks slower than you'd want for him. You know, the Islanders don't have that kind of puck moving defenseman that can skate like they did when they had Nick Leddy. And, you know, granted, Nick Leddy got a lot of criticism last year too, when you look back on his season with the Islanders last year. But at the same time, it's just more noticeable, I think, now without someone like a Leddy, and you have basically replaced him with the Zdeno Chara, and you're putting a lot of the pressure to fill that role that Leddy played on Noah Dobson. So, you know, you saw the criticism, and I think it comes from a fair point because of the expectations that are on Chara, the belief that he can still play. And then he goes out there and he doesn't necessarily look like he's 100% in sync. And that's a problem for the Islanders, right? Because when the offense isn't going, when the defense is making a lot of mistakes, all of this starts to pile up. The goaltending's not making saves. You know, all these things become much, much more highlighted. And the one thing I hate about criticizing defenders, and I say this a lot, whether it's on Hockey Night in New York or to people when we have these conversations, that defense is the toughest position to play because you get all of the blame and you get none of the credit unless you're scoring goals. And so kind of in that vein, with all this going on, that's kind of where I'm coming at this from in the analysis of where Char has been. So I think Char is also acclimating to a little bit of a new system and new partners and playing in a little bit of a different role. And I think that takes time. I think you've seen a lot the last couple of years with Islanders that come in and don't have a ton of time to acclimate and adjust and get used to everybody, that, you know, they struggle for a little bit before finally catching that rhythm. And you know, we've seen in the past with some of the forwards and Pageau, you saw it last year in Palmieri and Zajac. And I think that's kind of part of what's happening here too. It's a bit of Zdeno Chara showing his age, a bit of him trying to acclimate to a little bit of a new system and a new D partner, and two, kind of the surrounding players around him also struggling on the blue line.
The way that the Islanders play is as a team. And I think Zdeno Chara has come from different circumstances, and now he joins this Islanders team and he needs to fit into this system. And I think that you saw the few times that he was out of position, you bring up great points. It wasn't just his fault. Four other players and a goaltender contributed to that. He's just the scapegoat because, one, he's the biggest player on the ice. Right. He's also the biggest name, and he is a newcomer that isn't exactly fitting in. So I think that it is going to be a Palmieri, it is going to be a Pageau situation. That's a really good point that I don't think I've heard many people say before. You just have to give Chara a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think too. And I think the other sort of situation you're going to see is Sebastian Aho is going to get some playing time as well. Where that's going to be and who that's going to be for is something to watch for. I'm very curious to see the plan that Barry Trotz has for that defensive core. Cause I mean, as much as you don't want to scapegoat Zdeno Chara, he's also 44, you know, Andy Green is also up there in age too. And that's not to say that they're old, but in hockey years, you know, they're certainly up there. And Sebastian Aho presents an opportunity for a younger player, fresher legs, someone who's known for his ability to skate and be kind of that Nick Leddy role. So I'm very curious to see how that plays out, as well as how much time Zdeno Chara gets playing with Dobson before you start to see him moved around a little bit in the defensive end of the lineup, because you saw that during the game against Chicago, where Barry Trotz moved Zdeno Chara around a little bit and changed up the D pairings, and that seemed to settle things down a little bit.
And I wonder if fans are taking a look back. I'm sure Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz aren't, but a sentiment I've seen is that Eric Gustafson would have been a great fit as well on this D line. And I think that a lot of fans are thinking about that as well, and Aho, and seeing how they can help this team if in a different world Gustafson was there. But right now it seems to be Aho is the guy that can give these two older players some rest.
Yeah, I think too, if you're looking at this too from the perspective of the Islanders and how they kind of want to see some of these players develop, Eric Gustafson is had a great camp. There's no question about it. He certainly, in my mind, I thought he earned a spot on the blue line. I thought he earned a contract. I was very surprised when things kind of developed the way they did, with him being the one that was released from the trial contract. On the flip side of that, you know, from a development perspective and from wanting to see the guys that you've invested so much money in all these years, to, you know, succeed, this is a great opportunity for Sebastian Aho, who's been a tremendous player down in the AHL for years, really get an opportunity to get some consistent playing time. You know, Aho obviously, you know, kind of rode the bus, so to speak, last year with the Islanders. But, you know, you saw him, I think, for two games when Noah Dobson was going through some of his COVID things, issues. And so this is an opportunity where I think you have a much better chance to see Aho develop more of consistent ice time, even if it's sporadic as he fills in for Green and Zdeno Chara. And it's a good maybe litmus test or a good stepping stone for him to be more of an active and more of a constant presence, not this year maybe, but years going forward, once you have Zdeno Chara, who's only going to be here most likely this year, or Andy Green, who will most likely only be here for this year.
Aho is a potential solution, as is maybe switching up the pairs. And you saw that when Zdeno Chara played with Ryan Pulock. When that move was made in the game against Chicago, the Islanders started to excel. Is that something that could stick?
Yeah, you know, I think something that people kind of forget, and maybe it was one of those things that Trotz talked about, and then it was among so many other things that he talked about, people kind of forgot it. It shouldn't come as too much a surprise that he made the decision to kind of move the D pairings around a little bit, because that's something he talked about in training camp, specifically talking about Zdeno Chara. You think back to some of the things he said when someone asked him about that. He said something to the effect of he can see Chara playing with a Scott Mayfield. He can see Chara playing with a Pulock. He can see Chara playing in these different positions and different roles on the defensive end. So that, I think, wasn't that much of a surprise. I think where my curiosity comes in here is whether the plan or the framework for how that's going to be played out is more of a reactionary or sort of a proactive approach. And there was something I actually asked Trotz today ahead of the Columbus game about, because I was curious if that was more a reactionary decision or a proactive decision. Because I think if it's a proactive decision, maybe that gives us a better inclination of how this is going to be rolled out during the regular season. Trotz now said it was more of a reactionary decision to do that. So to me, I think now you're going to see the lineup defensively be something around what we've seen that since the start of the season. But if he finds pairings that click in the meshing up of some of these during the course of games, maybe those are the ones that stick for a while before they just don't work anymore. And then he moves them around again. And maybe that's just the way that the defense is going to be handled over the course of the season.
A similar debate that has arisen amongst the Islanders has been who should be that top line winger. Kyle Palmieri was the top line winger in the first three games, but Oliver Wahlstrom, 3 goals in 3 games is a pretty good start for him. But can he keep up the scoring touch?
You know, I think it's going to be the ups and downs of a young player's season. Even Matthew Barzal goes through kind of these ebbs and flows during the course of a year, and he's kind of solidified his spot on that top line. What I think the plan and what I think will happen here with Oliver Wahlstrom, I don't think this is the year that we see him get into the top line. And I think the reason, actually, it's funny, we had this conversation on Hockey Night in New York the other day. The reason I think that is still you want to give him some insulation from the pressure, because the moment you put him on the top line, the pressure and the expectations, while there are a lot on him, they change. And I think you really have to be comfortable with Oliver Wahlstrom's confidence level and maturity and where he's at in his career. If you're going to put him on that top line, because like I said, the moment you put him up there, the moment you put him on a line with Matthew Barzal and Anders Lee, the perception, the expectation, everything changes. And there's so much more pressure and there's so much more weight. And I think you're still seeing him get out of that zone where he sometimes does try to do too much, even on the third line. It's something that Barry Trotz actually talked about after the Carolina game, the game they lost to open the season. You know, he said he saw Oliver Wahlstrom still trying to do too much. And so if he's still trying to do too much on the third line, he's going to have an extra amount of pressure to try and do more on the first line. And that could create more problems. So I think right now, Kyle Palmieri has been, you know, an excellent winger for the Islanders there on that top line. He's meshed well with Matthew Barzal, who had a pretty good, he had a pretty good relationship. He had a pretty good chemistry with during the limited opportunities he got last year during the play, during the regular season, even a little bit in the playoffs. And then you've seen him and Anders Lee really kind of find their groove as well, which has been good. So I don't know if the decision right now would be smart to move a Palmieri out of that spot and put Wahlstrom in there concerning the current circumstances.
But a good thing that Islanders fans have seen from Wahlstrom at a just basic level is he shoots the puck a lot.
Yeah.
And that seems to be something this team really needs.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the conversation we've been having for a long time. Right. Because it's always been the Islanders problem. People have always been clamoring for kind of that the natural goal scorer. And Wahlstrom certainly seemed to have some of the traits of that. And he's a guy who just goes out and shoots the puck. And you see the Islanders start to create more chances when they have players just going out and shooting the puck. It's been a problem with the power play in the years past. It's been a problem with regenerating offensive opportunities in years past. So for the Islanders to have a guy like that, as young as he is still, and for him to continue to be able to develop in that system and develop that skill set even more, I think that's, you know, that's a great thing. It's something that Islander fans, I'm sure, you know, like I said, they've been clamoring for that for years, and they finally got something like it.
Islanders fans are looking for a shooter, and they're also looking for that fourth line to be what it once was. The team seems to really need this fourth line, and Matt Martin being back from injury after a difficult offseason certainly helps that. What does his return mean to the Islanders?
You know, it's you really notice, and I kind of mentioned it before, you really noticed what his presence on that fourth line meant in the first two games. You just didn't see them as effectiveness, you know, as effective as they could have been or they would have been. You really, for lack of a better term, you know, you saw them lacking a bit of that identity there on that fourth line. And that's big for the Islanders, because the Islanders generate a lot of offense. They generate a lot of momentum. They generate a lot of who they are from the play of that fourth line. And so when things are going bad, like they were in the first two games, that fourth line becomes even more crucial. And so because you didn't see them have the same impact when they would throw their body around, they just weren't as noticeable. You know, the game against Chicago, they were noticeable. You noticed when Matt Martin and Clutterbuck and Casey Zekas, when they were on the ice, obviously he had the goal. Cal Clutterbuck obviously had the scoring chance the game before that in Florida, but still maybe that was the most noticeable they had been, in that game. Chicago was a different story. You certainly noticed them more. You felt their presence more. And when you have that, it changes the course of games. I mean, you know, you saw it in the playoffs last year. You saw it during the regular season. That's just what they do. They throw their body around. They can generate some scoring chances. Casey Zekas is someone who has offensive ability. Kyle Clutterbuck too. You know, he has a bit of offensive talent that goes a little under noticed and underappreciated sometimes. And, you know, Matt Martin's a guy who's going to surprise you every once in a while, net a big goal and kind of really generate a lot of buzz from that. So they play obviously very well-known, understood, physical, hard-nosed game. And that leads to offensive opportunities. That leads to offensive chances. Even if they don't pot the puck in, you know, when they're buzzing and when they're going and when they're creating that havoc on the ice, it's creating opportunities for the Islanders. And that's why it's so important to have a Matt Martin out there. And you kind of noticed the drop off when you had Ross Johnson, who he had good moments during the preseason. He played a few preseason games with Zekas and with Cal Clutterbuck there. Even had that goal in the preseason to open the exhibition game up against the New York Rangers. So you saw what looked like, hey, maybe that's something that the Islanders can work with. And it didn't translate. And the moment you had that group and those three back together again, you noticed them again. You noticed their impact they have on the game.
I think a fun story to summarize Matt Martin's importance is one that Emily Kaplan shared for ESPN on Tuesday. She said that Cal Clutterbuck and Matt Martin were both convinced they'd be chosen in the Seattle expansion draft. When they called their agents, however, they were told they were protected, which really surprised the two because they weren't expecting that. And their agents or Lou Lamoriello hadn't told them that. So it really seems like the fourth line, while not the same, maybe what it once was, it means so, so much to Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of what the Islanders' style of play is. They are the embodiment of what Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz talk about when it comes to playing Islanders hockey. And it's hard to really find another another group like that in the National Hockey League. When you look at their importance and when you look at their impact on games and their impact on teams, you don't see that. You've noticed now a lot more teams trying to replicate what that line does. I mean, a perfect example is what the New York Rangers have done just across the river over in Manhattan. Some of their additions certainly have a similar feel to it of what, you know, that they're trying to do and trying to replicate what the Islanders have done. And we've seen in other markets as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm surprised it surprised them, because I think anyone who watches this team play and listens to the way Barry Trotz talks about that line and those guys, it shouldn't come as much of a surprise that they would protect them, because they certainly value them a lot. And that those three of them, Clutterbuck, Martin, Cizikas, mean way more than I think could ever be quantified to the Islanders organization, and at their current state.
So, Christian, to conclude our conversation here, let's move on to discuss the things that fans are really waiting for right now. That is a new arena at Belmont Park. So, Christian, will that building be ready by November 20th?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any question about that. I know over the weekend there was some rumors going around that that the opening would be pushed back 2 weeks, that the Islanders would have to play at NASA Coliseum. I don't foresee that, especially because I think that would be something that would have already been out in the public spectrum at some point, whether reporting through Newsday or the Post or, you know, my outlet. That's a pretty big thing to keep secret. And especially because of the red tape that you need to go through with scheduling NHL games at a different venue when you already have them scheduled at UBS Arena. For just kind of to go through this real quick, you know, Nassau Coliseum is a county-owned venue. That would have to go through the county. It would have to go through their current leaseholder, and it would have to go through the National Hockey League. I'd be hard-pressed to imagine that the three of those entities that I've just named, someone within those three entities wouldn't have somehow let this information get out at that point. Because there are a lot of really good journalists, much better than me, that just kind of has a very base understanding of county politics, that cover sports and they cover, you know, county politics in the league, that would be all over that. So just on that level, I was kind of surprised and hard pressed to believe that. But also, you know, I think you look at the progress at UBS Arena right now. There's just been so much. They obviously been very good, I'm sure, strategically, to send out a lot of updates over the last couple of weeks, even, you know, send these clips to the media, with the banners being installed in the new venue, with the scoreboard going up, with the lights, with the ice being put down and all that. And you can certainly see, it looks like everything is basically done on the interior as far as the bowl goes and as far as seating goes. I believe they started two-a-day shifts, 24 hours on, 24 hours off kind of thing recently. So, you know, they're chugging along. I don't foresee any sort of instance where this arena is not going to be ready. So I think Islander fans can breathe easy that UBS Arena is going to open on November 20th, with the Calgary Flames playing the Islanders the night before. There's some sort of charity concert there on the 19th. So I think it's full steam ahead. People can rest easy that the Islanders are going to play in a state-of-the-art venue that is almost done. And obviously a bit of a sad anniversary the day that you're recording this with me. This is the anniversary of Charles Wong's death. And Charles Wong obviously played such a monumental role in obviously keeping the Islanders on Long Island. And then even after they went to Brooklyn, playing a hand and getting the Islanders to Belmont Park where they are now.
Certainly important to bring him up, because his vision was to keep the Islanders on Long Island, and that will certainly be happening with UBS Arena. And I think what I've been noticing and what I've been hearing from people who work at UBS Arena who are on the ground, what I've been hearing, the sentiment seems to be the building will be ready, the hockey will be perfect, but maybe the amenities won't be 100%. Maybe there won't be some painting done. Maybe there won't be this suite done. Right. That's what it seems to be that I've been hearing, is that it's going to be 90% done. You're going to notice a few things not done, but hockey's going to be played and it's going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think that happened to Disneyland too, when they opened that in the 50s, yep. But, no, I think that's, I'm sure other major venues too have gone through this. And obviously with the hoops that everyone has kind of had to jump through with the pandemic that's gone on, it's somewhat understandable that a project like this might not have everything done once the building is ready and opened. That being said, when you think about how much red tape there is to do any sort of construction in New York State or on Long Island, to see how quickly the arena has progressed over the last couple of years, even with a shutdown during the pandemic, I mean, it is a pretty impressive thing to see.
It certainly is. And it also is impressive to look at the schedule and see a 13-game road trip until the Islanders return home. What are you looking for this team to improve upon as they hit the road on this road trip?
Yeah, I think really it's finding that cohesion and getting back to their style of play and playing it consistently. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You want to see Ilya Sorokin continue to find the rhythm that he had in that game against Chicago. Semyon Varlamov is getting towards healthy. I think there's some confidence that we could see him at some point in the next couple games. So that's a big boost for the Islanders too, and it'll help kind of iron out some of the issues that they've had in the first two, three games. And again, really just get back to their style of play. You want to see Wahlstrom play at that consistent level that he's been playing. You want to see Barzal start to put up, the points in that top line, really do what it's been doing through the first couple games and making that offense and creating that offensive impact that they've had. And really you want to see that second line start to generate that secondary scoring, which you kind of expect them to do as well. So really, I think the big bottom line is consistency, and the Islanders need points. It's crucial early in the seasons where they've gotten a lot of their points in years past as well, despite slow starts. But that becomes even more important this year with the fact that it's truncated season, with the fact that it's the first time they're playing an 82 game season in the last 2 years. And the fact that once you get towards the second half of the year, that's when the Islanders, for some reason, no one's really been able to explain this, but for some reason, they always kind of have that second half slide. And then they go from first place to a wild card spot or third in the division. So a lot of that has had to do with the number of points they're able to pick up early on. And the Islanders are going to need to continue that as they go through this extended road trip.
And they certainly will. And the Islanders are also looking to see if the experts were right. Usually they predict the Islanders to struggle, but now they're Stanley Cup favorites. So for our final question here, Christian, do you think the Islanders have what it takes to win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I predicted that they would win the Cup before the start of the season, and I will stick with that. I think this is an Islanders team that is getting it together. There's a lot of good things you have to like and be excited about. And once you kind of iron out some of the details that have been kind of hindering them, I should say, once you kind of solidify or figure out how you're going to deploy your defensive units and how you're going to make sure that everyone's given the right amount of time so that they're not overworked. And you start to see that offense come together and everyone in the lineup scoring, I think this is a team that has proven that it can play with just about anyone and play with the best teams in the league. So I'm going to stick with my prediction that they will win a Stanley Cup. I think it'll take 7 games, and I think they'll end up having to play Colorado for the Cup, but I think they win it.
Well, Christian, I really appreciate your time today, and I'm sure Islanders fans appreciate your optimism. Thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Of course, I'm happy to do it. And don't forget, obviously, listen to your great podcast, but make sure you check out myihockeynow.com and you listen every week to Hockey Night in New York and come out to the October 30th Boozy Brunch Bash over at RJ Daniels in Rockville Center.
Of course, that was Christian Arnold, editor-in-chief of NYI Hockey Now. Thank you so much to everyone who listened today right here on Believe in Islanders. I will see you next week with another great episode.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.